What up, everybody? It's the Well-Spoken Token, and you're listening to the Well-Spoken Token Podcast. Here on the show, we talk about everything on the black nerd spectrum, like anime, comics, movies, and trading card games, all through the lens of a backwoods black boy from East Texas. I'm a 28-year-old college dropout with a lot of life experience, and hopefully you get some sort of enjoyment from my perspective. Make sure you check out our socials and tune in every Wednesday for new episodes. This is the Well-Spoken Token, and I'm out. No need piddle farting around. It's time to check back with everybody right now. What up, everybody? It's the Well-Spoken Token coming at you again with another episode. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so happy to be here with you guys today. I'm so happy that you decided to click that button today and check out the podcast, whether it's in the morning for you and you're on the way to work, or you're just getting up before wiping the crust out your eyes, morning yawning and all that good shit. Or if you're a midday listener, you're like on the way back home, you're just like, I got to commute, got to get through this. I just want something to go ahead and ease my mind. I'm happy that you clicked this podcast. And if you're a late night listener, you freaky motherfucker, I'm so happy that you're here. Go ahead and get your roll-ups or whatever you like to do and go ahead and kick back, because we got a whole show for you today. Guys, man, it's nice to be here, yo, because like, let me go ahead and bring it down real fast, bring it down real quick. It's been a doozy of a weekend. God, I use such weird, goofy ass language, but I like it. I like the way I fucking talk, so I'm gonna keep doing it. But I've had a doozy of a weekend, y'all. So as everybody has kind of heard, I've talked about it on the pod multiple times. My pops has been in a lot of declining health as of late, ups and downs, here's or there's, and I'm so happy for everybody like here. I'm so happy that everybody here at the pod has been so like fucking supportive during all of this. I really appreciate each and every one of you guys that's reached out and said, you know, hey, it's gonna be okay, you know, asking about my pops and stuff, making sure that he's all right, checking in on me, just seeing how I'm doing and stuff. It really means a lot to me, yo, and I'm so happy to have like this community of individuals kind of there during all of this shit. And so I love you guys. I'll say it every episode, and I'll continue to say it every fucking episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and being so fucking supportive and loving. And just, that's this outpouring of love towards my family and stuff like that. So I appreciate that shit. But over the weekend, we had some really rough times with the fam. Like, my pops had a little issue on Wednesday, popped into the emergency room. They were like, yo, you need to go ahead and go to a bigger city. So they helicoptered him over to the next biggest metropolitan area, and they got his ass in there and they started looking at him, and they were like, yo, we got to do a lot, might be a surgery time type shit. And so it's always a little iffy when a motherfucker with heart issues is like, we're gonna put you under anesthesia and shit. Also, you need dialysis, nigga. My dad decided he didn't want to do fucking dialysis, so he was fucking ixnaying on that stuff. It was kind of bad. It was definitely a bad idea. I was like, damn, dad, you didn't have to do that. But he thought he was going to go ahead and be able to regulate himself. And I was proud of him for wanting to give it a shot and wanting to try to make sure the quality of his life was as good as possible. But unfortunately, he ended up causing more issues than he was really fixing. So in any case, he went back into the hospital a bit worse off than he was prior to. So anyway, they decided they got to go ahead and do the surgery, and they put him under, and this was really difficult for me to say. But when he went under, the surgery went really good. They got him out. He was in recovery. 30 minutes after recovery, Pop stops breathing. It's some wild shit. We're all up there. I was at the hospital with him, just chilling and stuff. And then I left, came home, and immediately got a call. Yo, your dad's not breathing. Turn around. Come back. So I come back immediately. I jump the car. I'm flying down the highway. I'm getting back to with my fucking father, trying to figure out what's happening. And turns out, you know, they lost him. He wasn't breathing, and his heart fucking stopped. They had to shock his ass back to fucking life. They had to restart his heart and shit. And it was terrifying. When they finally got him back, he had been under for so long that it was a risk that he might have brain damage, different shit like that. So the whole family is just a wreck. We hadn't seen him because he's got so many tubes and different things like that in him. He's not breathing well on his own. He's got some lung function, so they're very hopeful. They've got a tube down his throat and shit. He's hooked up to every fucking thing. By the time I got me and Villain up there to go see him, you know, after everybody else had kind of had their opportunity to be around him and stuff, it was pretty late in the evening and he had just started regaining consciousness. And he looked up at us, man, and I saw that he recognized us. And so I was immediately happy. But then I saw just terror and fear in his eyes, you know, because he didn't know what the hell was going on. And he starts motioning for us to come up to him and stuff. And I'm like, shit. And I just immediately look over my like my baby brother, yo, and I'm like, this is tough, yo. I was that moment right there. I would say like semi traumatized me a little bit, just a little bit, because he was so fucking frantic because he just didn't know what the fuck was going on. He saw people that he recognized and was just like, yo, come here. I'm trying to talk. And he starts trying to talk. He's got a tube down his throat. Man, we just had to kind of like break it down and be like, yo, we love you. We've been praying for you. Like, you know, hey, it's gonna be okay. Just like, you gotta calm down. We're gonna be right here. And you know, we stayed there that night. You know, my baby brother was like, yo, I'm gonna sleep here, yeah, like I cannot leave old man alone. And it was rough. You know, we got him back once they finally got the tube out of his throat. He's back speaking and shit. And it was fantastic to hear his voice, because for a moment there, I didn't know if I was ever going to hear from my father again. So I thank God. I thank the doctors, yo. I thank everybody that prayed for my father to make sure that motherfucker got out here, man. I'll just tell you, just live on the podcast, God is good, whether you believe or not. You know, I'm not even here to, you know, hit you with the religious stuff. I'm just letting you know what I believe. And I'm just so thankful to the big man upstairs that I believe in that helped, you know, these motherfucking doctors keep my dad alive. So it's still running. It's still a little rough. You know, he's not out of the hospital yet, and we're not out of the woods yet, but we still got a lot of faith and stuff like that. So man, just big asking for prayers and love and metachlorians and vibes and whatever the fuck you got to give. Yo, I'm trying to get it. Send it that way, man. Pray for my pops. Pray for the doctors that are working out old man. If I got a platform, I damn sure gonna use it to solicit fucking help from my fucking family. Just gotta make sure everybody eat, you know, everybody gonna eat. But I'm so just fucking baffled by how wild that weekend was, because I went from like I'm just chilling, getting ready to make the pod, shit like that, to like thinking about what I'm gonna do and, you know, for the next week and shit, trying to prepare and stuff so I can, you know, give you guys the pod that, you know, I promised and shit. No more late pods. I said that shit way at the beginning, and like, look at me, had a whole delayed episode. But I'm so thankful for you motherfuckers for riding. I'm so thankful to you guys as family for riding with me and checking out the pod, even though, you know, it's like so inconsistent at times, you know. So again, appreciate everybody that checked that out on the pod. Thank you to everybody that's been checking out YouTube stuff. You know, I get to put these videos out, and it's really awesome that people go out and check them out. I've always wanted to, you know, fucking play video games and talk to people and shit. So I'm very excited for this kind of this next section, because I'm a huge video game motherfucker. You know, my pops was one of the first, the nigga that bought me the first console I ever owned. So, you know, just relating that back to that shit. You know, I got to mix the family shit in and kind of make as many jokes as I fucking can, because again, I was like, I was a wreck and I didn't know if I was going to be able to do the pod today, but I was like, no, I'm going to do it. I just got to tell you motherfuckers about it, yo, because if I tell you motherfuckers as much as I possibly can, yo, I try to get real with y'all when I jump on the mic. So I appreciate y'all. I told y'all were family. So, you know, you get it, you know, you all get it. It's a part of that motherfucking thing. And, you know, one thing I was really thinking about while dealing with all the crazy shit over the weekend with my pops, you know, being in the hospital and stuff, and the thought about losing the old man and shit, I was like, damn, you know, maybe, and this is a fucking silly ass take, it would take a real weeb to have this idea, but I was like, damn, did anime semi-prepare me for loss, right? And I was like, well, and then I had to go in my brain and try to like justify the thought, because I was like, well, I gotta have this. It's not just a weeb ass thought here. It's just like anime preparing you. But I think a lot of people use media, books, TV, you know, whatever you've got out there to cope, right? Like, or not just cope, but also like get another perspective, see things from a different like point of view. You know, you might not have ever lost anyone super close to you, but watching like fucking Simone in Gurren Lagann lose Kamina, right? And watching him grieve through that process and realizing and waking up every day and realizing that that person isn't there to be around you. Like if you haven't experienced remorse, I mean, not remorse, but if you haven't experienced grief in that vein, right? If you haven't had anybody that close to you die, like you get to watch somebody else go through this thing. And then also if you're an empathetic person, like feel a portion of that, step into that person's shoes and thus prepare yourself like a little bit down the line. I've always liked that, personally, I've always liked that about anime, right, is that it's an opportunity to kind of watch situations play out that you either A, thought would never happen or completely couldn't ever happen, like, you know, giant 10-tailed beasts rampaging through the fucking cities. I mean, it could happen if the aliens attack or if Cthulhu is real, but I doubt it, right? Like, I doubt it very seriously. So you get to see some of these fantastical things and step off into a world, but then also, like, there's a whole nother section of the anime or a whole nother layer of the anime, right? Anime universe that is all about, like, dealing with real human issues, right? Grief, you know, jealousy, fucking love, romance. Like it's wrapped up all in this package. And I guess that's not just anime, that's books, that's movies. I think that's why us as humans gravitate towards these things. You know, they give us that opportunity to, you know, look through the window and see someone else living this portion of your life. Or on the flip side, have somebody to go through that time frame with. I know a lot of people that use like anime to go through a grieving process. Like I've met friends that have just gone back and watched like the saddest anime they could fucking find. They just go back and be like, I'm going to watch all of motherfucking 91 Days again, just because I need to be in this headspace. I need to be watching somebody else go through and actually get a chance to push their feelings out or put them out in a physical way. And that can be cathartic for so many people. And like I said, that's not just anime, that's the books. Yeah, I've read a ton of, like, I've met a ton of people who are always like, I'm rereading this book. I used to reread Touching Spirit Bear all the time just because I didn't ever really have an anger issue. But the book had it was a story about a young lad who was dealing with anger issues and was sent off to an island to fucking live by his damn self and come to terms with his anger issues. And through reading that book, I was able to, you know, come to terms with my own thought process of not having anger issues, but realizing that, hey, anger is okay in some ways and shapes, forms, or fashion. And if you ever get to that point, here's how a way to deal with it. It's just gaining knowledge, I guess. So I appreciate fucking anime, you know. That was really just my whole point on that situation. It was like, yo, you can use anime and shit to kind of cope with things or to empathize or sympathize with a situation going on in your life. That's how I actually like quantified that in my brain so that I could continue down that line of thought while I was sitting in the hospital. It was a good distraction, like while I was worried about my fucking father in there breathing and shit, you know. So while I'm sitting there in the waiting room and shit, I decided, well, you know, I might as well use my time wisely. So I started coming up with a list. I thought, I was like, yo, I'm gonna bring you guys a list of the anime deaths that fucked me up the most or the anime deaths that impacted me the most back in the day. I hope that this is in no way, shape, form, or fashion like a comprehensive list of like the saddest deaths in anime. So don't come for me like that. Like it's like, hey, no, did you forget? Or did you forget this motherfucker that died? Or you didn't talk about this person or shit. Actually, this is a perfect opportunity for you guys to like hit me up in the comments. Check me out. Let me know what you thought the saddest death for you was or what impacted you the most. I want to know what anime deaths you were just sitting in your room when you were young or like, you know, hell, when you were even like older, like or just recently and you just watched a character like go through like a whole death and a fucking grieving process and shit, like what really messed you up. But here's my top five in my own opinion. First up on the list, I've already mentioned him previously, but it's gotta be Kamina. I'm talking big bro in Gurren Lagann. You guys have seen the artwork and stuff. You see, I've got the blacked out Kamina glasses. He's one of my favorite animes, and it's also one of the deaths that really rocked me. I was just watching the anime, having a fucking fantastic time, and I was like, the saddest thing that had happened was like this, like somebody got kissed, and it was like, oh damn, man. I can't believe my homie kissed her. Damn. Like, I really want to kiss her. And that was it. Like, I was like, okay, well, I can deal with this. There was a couple of like spotty moments here or there where I thought this was going to be a little sad. And then out of the blue, you get the big climactic battle. You know, homie's having problems. Simone's having problems and shit like that, trying to get it up and stuff in terms of like the willpower to fight and shit because of what he's witnessed in the past. Big spoilers for Gurren Lagann, by the way. I already just, you know, spoiled that situation, but either way, and then out of nowhere, fucking Kamina, who he views as his big brother, just like comes flying at him and just like decks him in the fucking mouth. He's like, let me see you grit those teeth, and then just decks him, knocks some sense into the kid, and he's able to fucking amass the willpower to take over the big ship, and everything's fucking fantastic. You got this triumphant feeling in your body, and fucking Kamen is walking off just like, yeah, you know, my big homie, I knew he had it in him. I knew my little homie had it in him. All he needed was a good old fashioned just, yeah, sock to the face, right? And then out of fucking nowhere, just the same as like the triumphant moment happened, the bad guy just shows up and just drops him, breaks his fucking back, breaks Kamina's back. It just deposits his whole battle robot at the bottom of the ship that they're trying to take over and leaves him for fucking dead. And it was just the sound of this man's back cracking was so fucking, it was the scream of pain that emanated from this voice actor. I was blown the shit away. And it's also, I watched that shit in dub, and I don't always think that English voice actors do anime justice when it comes to some of these scenes, but oh my God, the way that shit was heart-wrenching, right? And then for him to have like a broken back and come back and finish the final fight and help his buddy out just at the end right there, it was incredible. Because it really does. The anime sets you up for a moment where it's like, maybe he gets to live. Maybe he's alive, you know, and then he's just fucked up. Maybe he's paralyzed. You're just all the hope in the world. And then he just dies in the cockpit of his battle robot or his Gurren, or no, his Lagann, excuse me. I'm trying not to get too fucking in the weeds when it comes to all the anime terms and shit like that, because some of you might not have ever checked out Gurren Lagann, so you don't need a whole world basis of it. But the death itself rocked me. I was just sitting there thinking about like the relationship between brothers, even pseudo brothers, and the loss that people feel. And then after you get through with his death, right? What's even better about the deaths, and I think what makes it to the list, or what makes it get to my list, excuse me, is that the grieving process afterwards, because Simone was devastated. He just wouldn't fucking talk, wouldn't fucking eat. And it took a whole arc, a whole couple episodes to get this man back to fighting shape. And even then he was still absolutely wrecked on the inside there. So I got to give Kamina that number one spot, or at least mention him first, because geez, was that a death that really made me contemplate like my own passing, my brother's passing, some of my best friends passing. It hooked me on the show, really. It made me a big Gurren Lagann fan, because I was like, where are you guys going to take this from here? How much is this character Simone going to grow because of what he's had to experience and deal with? Or is this going to break him? You just had to keep watching. That was what was so dope about that. Next up on the list, number two, I've got Jiraiya from Naruto. And guys, that situation was not so much of a sadness for Jiraiya, because we got a whole, what, 5-6 episodes, maybe more, with Jiraiya. And you know, it was definitely more than 5 or 6 episodes. You had quite a few episodes with Jiraiya, almost a whole arc, right, where you get to fall in love with the character and the way he is with Naruto, who has had surrogate fathers over time, but never one that was just like day to day, every day in his life. Like, you'd see Iruka and he had different like shit with school and stuff because he was a teacher, but with Jiraiya it was a whole different vibe. Like, it was a moment, an opportunity for fucking Naruto to have a parental figure there with him every day, who was also helping him with his ninja, or his ninja way, and it was beautiful. And then to watch him go on this mission for the Hidden Leaf, because I'm going to get into the weeds a little bit with Naruto, because I feel like more people have checked that out. But for him to go on the mission for this Hidden Leaf and try to find out the identity of Pain and deal with them, and then to watch him get fucking jumped, like, just, he's kicking ass at one point, revealing all sorts of dope new moves. Like, you get to see like Sage Mode for the first time there. And then for him to get fucking jumped, like, all 9 of them motherfuckers, well, not all 9, but like 8 of them motherfuckers dropped out of nowhere and just beat his ass, crushed my man's throat and killed him. And then he still manages to get like his message across. He's still able to complete the mission, like a true G, like a true boss. That moment, right, I was looking at, I was like, oh my god, like, I'm shocked. I'm like, damn, are they really gonna kill my dude? Like, there's a RDC World video, or they're like, are they really gonna kill my nigga, bro? Are they really about to kill him? And they really killed his ass. They really killed him. But what locked it in for me and what added it on this list was watching Naruto deal with the loss of Jiraiya. When my man's is in his room and he's just like opening up instant ramen, pouring the water in, and just like, damn, I used to eat ramen with Jiraiya. And he's just crying. He's not sobbing. Like, his shoulders are not like racked and everything like that. He's not like boohooing and shit. He's just got tears streaming down his fucking face, just straight face. My god, man, that was the saddest we'd ever seen Naruto. And we had to watch him deal with Haruzen's death, and like Sarutobi, the fucking third Hokage, his death wasn't even like, it was sad and all the kids were like, oh no, but it was like losing a grand, like, and mind you, losing grandparents are really like sad. It's sad. I had a really bad loss, like, with my grandmother and shit, so I know that that's really sad and shit. But for losing her, like, Haruzen was like losing like a great grandparent or grandparent or something, where it's sad, they're very close to home, there's so many memories and shit. But like, Jiraiya was like losing a parent, and losing a parent for a lot of, and you know, this isn't the same for everybody, but for most people, people could agree, like, losing someone in the immediate, like, right there vicinity of you is sometimes harder than losing a grandparent. I mean, just some people have described it that way. I can't speak for everybody, but that's what I would feel like. If I lost my dad this weekend, I feel like I would be even sadder than I was when my grandmother passed. And I can't even imagine how that could be, because I was fucked up when my grandma died. So watching Naruto deal with Jiraiya's death definitely put this up there on the second list, or second on my list, excuse me. Then you've got number 3, and I put this one up here just because it's super recent. I had to at least give some love to something like fairly like recent, not just all this old classic anime and shit when I was young. But Rengoku from Demon Slayer, the Flame Hashira. Spoilers for Demon Slayer. I really should say spoilers way at the beginning of this. I'm definitely timestamping this episode so that you guys know when all these like spoilers and stuff are happening. But hopefully you've gotten a chance to check out Mugen Train, or you've checked out the second part of Demon Slayer that's aired on Hulu, Crunchyroll, Funimation. You can check that out. That the first 7 episodes of the second season are all retelling or adaptations of Mugen Train, so you get to witness all the awesomeness that happened during that. You don't know, they're not screwing people over and just skipping straight into the next arc. They give you that interim as well. But Rengoku, man, this is a character that we did not get a chance to love for long, right? You didn't get a chance to like deal with this character for a very long time. If you read the manga, right, like, he's there for that whole arc, which I think I can't even quantify how many issues, but it's not a lot of of issues. So, I mean, just as much of a blink of an eye as a 2-hour movie or like, you know, a 7-episode like portion of a series, it's not a very long time with a character. But in that space, in that span of time, I fell in love with that. And pause. But I fell in love with that nigga Rengoku, man. He had all of the upright spirit of a shonen character, but he was mad honorable, super blunt though. I just love the way he just came out with shit in this like straight faced. It's a straight face, but his face is just pretty much locked in this consistent, constant, just like excited, semi-positive look. He just looks like this happy guy, and sometimes like that face just gets a chance to say some really dope shit. But he takes the motherfucking cake. Like, takes a cake, steals the show. That's what I was looking for. Steals the show when it comes to Mugen Train and Demon Slayer, because that arc, he single-handedly saves most of the train from like the evil demon that's taking over it and looking to consume all of them. He stops someone who is leagues above him in terms of strength, and manages to stall him out and save all of these people from having to go through this awful fate. It's incredible. He is doing the impossible, all for him to still end up dying at the end of it, and to go through this awesome fight, this incredible battle, right, saving the main character, making like he's like the dungeon master's NPC, which for my D&D guys, if you guys know about that, then awesome. If you don't, it just means like, I'm just going to give you a quick explanation. In Dungeons and Dragons, right, a lot of the times dungeon masters will create an NPC or a non-playable character, right? This individual is usually covered with plot armor or really strong, like at least a couple of levels over the players. That way, if they get into any BS or anything like that, they can come in, help them all out. It's like the babysitting situation for a dungeon master. Sometimes they can be good, sometimes they can be bad, but that nigga Rengoku was amazing. Like, he just drops in and wrecks shop, makes sure that the storyline can continue, even becomes like a part of the ending, the climactic battle, all the way at the end of the series. And it's awesome the way that's tied together. But watching the trio of Demon Slayer, Tanjiro, Inosuke, and what the hell is my homie's name? Zenitsu, excuse me. Because I love Zenitsu. I don't know why I forgot his damn name. But Zenitsu, watching those three guys just decide, we're training. Like, what? When fucking Inosuke grabs Tanjiro and starts dragging him off, he's like, we're going to go train right now. We're going to train. We're going to train through this grief and this sadness, goddamn it. Because that's what fucking Rengoku wanted. That shit touched me, man. It really touched me in a situation of like, wow, you can really leave behind a legacy without having a huge amount of time with a person. Like, your first impression, or just a couple of days, like the time that you have with someone, you never know the type of impact you're going to have on that individual and what could happen later to you. So that was the part of grief or loss that I really delved into when I looked at Rengoku. I was like, wow, this man, through his legacy, basically helped inspire these three to become like the next generation and put an end to the Demon Slayer situation, like the demon epidemic that I'd say that is Demon Slayer. And it was incredible watching those guys do that. Let's give number four. Now, number four is going back into time, yo. And this one was... this one was hard. This one was really hard. And honestly, it probably should be higher, like quicker and further mentioned. And this one's got like a kind of a dual part here, but it's Future Gohan from Dragon Ball Z, specifically Future Gohan in the story of Trunks, the history of Trunks, which is not technically canon because it was just it's like an OVA. But honestly, there's no other better backstory for Trunks. And it is essentially his backstory. It's just the telling of it. It's incredible because when you start the movie, because they produced it as a movie, it's not like a series or anything like that. And I think they even kind of semi-canonize it with Super, but They did that a lot with Dragon Ball Super. They went through and some of these things are canon now. Like Bardock, the father of Goku, semi-canon now. But that's also because of Broly, the Broly movie. But I digress. Let's get deeper into that. But Future Gohan, right? You start History of Trunks. And for those of you guys that know Dragon Ball Z, sorry, I'm about to give you a little bit of a quick recap. History of Trunks is based in the future where all of the Z fighters, talking Goku, Piccolo, Tien, Yamcha, Chiaotzu, Yajirobe, even Korin, Kami, all of these people are dead. They've been aced. Goku from a tragic heart disease, Vegeta from getting his shit punched in by Android 18. I can't even remember all the different clips and who killed who, but they all got aced by the androids, Androids 18 and Android 17. And so in this future apocalyptic world, the only people that are still alive, Z Fighter wise, the only person is Gohan. And Gohan has grown into a real deal badass. He is wearing his father's gi. He's got the traditional orange and the blue underneath. And he looks like Goku from like the face down, but his hair is just all Gohan. It's incredible. I don't mean to salivate over my homie and his look, but I remember this guy very, very fucking vividly. So he's the only Z fighter left, and he is single-handedly trying to keep some portions of the humanity safe from the androids and their fucking debauchery. So Bulma is still alive, and you find out that, and if you've watched Dragon Ball Z, you know that she has a son, and that son is with Vegeta. His name is Trunks. And Trunks, being a young cat, right? He's, I think he's a preteen, probably like 13 in this situation. And Gohan's in his 20s, because they don't give you his full age, but it's some time, and he's definitely a man grown at that point, but not like old. So he's bonding with Trunks. They have a really cool like brother relationship. And Trunks is always watching Gohan go out on these missions and try to save these people. And he's always wanting to go out there. He's like, I'm gonna go with you. And Gohan's like, yo, you can't, no, you cannot go. It's too damn dangerous. Bulma's like, no, you can't go. It's too damn dangerous. Hell, I wish Gohan would stop going. I wish he would just stay home, because they're the only people she has left. And she's matured into this like this widow, because, you know, she's lost her. She's not her husband. You know, Vegeta wasn't her husband, but she's lost her lover. She's, you know, no longer can run this corporation the same way that she did at one point. Right. She's got to kind of lay low and, you know, just work and tinker as she does. And she's a mom now, so her energy and vibe is different. Like, this is motherly Bulma. It's really dope. And I'm going to give a whole fucking thing about History of Trunks, because that's one of my fucking favorites. I love this fucking anime movie. So she's a motherly and shit, and Trunks and Gohan are bonding. And finally, one day, Gohan's like, yo, okay, we'll start training, because shit's getting dangerous and I could use the help. But at the same time, you do need to learn how to defend yourself. So he starts training Trunks, and that relationship kind of grows. And he watched Trunks just idolize Gohan and start trying to learn shit. And Gohan's like, yo, the one thing that you got to do before you go, you got to become a Super Saiyan, yo. So Trunks is trying his damnedest. And Gohan's like, just think about everything you've ever fucking lost, yo. Think about all the people that they've hurt, yo. Get angry, get mad, and then just let it all go. And that was the way he was trying to tell, you know, Trunks to transform and shit. But that kid had never gone through true like loss like that. He didn't have these experiences to draw on so that he could, you know, unlock this particular portion of his mind or his power, right? Because Goku, he first transformed after Krillin passes way back in the Frieza saga. That grief, that loss, right, triggers the ability for him to transform into a Super Saiyan. And I guess Gohan, his ability was obviously triggered by the loss of all the Z fighters. You don't get to see that shit. So it's a big plot point that Trunks is having issues turning into a Super Saiyan. And during all of this, like, they train for a couple of weeks, and there's an attack. There's an android attack. And Gohan immediately goes out. He's like, Trunks, you can back me up. But reluctantly, he's like, yo, just be careful. And when I tell you to get the fuck out the way, get the fuck out the way. Trunks goes and obviously does not. He jacks up within like the first like couple of rounds of the fight. And Gohan is forced to step in and save him. But in the process, he loses an arm, right? And that loss of an arm, and it's crazy, because in this particular universe, and this, all the Senzu beans are gone with Corrin not there and Yajirobe not there to tend to the fields and shit. Nobody's growing Senzu beans any goddamn more. So when Gohan loses his arm, it's not like he can just pop a Senzu bean and grow that shit back. Fucking Bulma's got to go in and do real deal surgery on my mans. And it's crazy to watch somebody go through surgery in Dragon Ball Z, because again, there's beans that grow arms back and shit, like heal you from damn near any ailment or injury. So it was this particular OVA was really visceral when it came to that kind of shit. But moving on, Gohan losing that arm, right, he's now fucking an arm down, so he's not nearly as ready for the fights as he would be prior when he was, you know, full armed and shit. So he goes, and there's a call, there's an issue, and he ends up having to go fight, and he it's like, yeah, Trunks is like, yeah, obviously I want to go. Of course I'm going to go. And fucking Gohan pulls the signature Dragon Ball Z move and he gives him that good old chop and knocks his ass out before the actual battle. And he takes off. He's like, sorry, kid, I just can't take you, because he's worried about his safety. He knows that without that arm, he's not going to be able to protect Trunks and fight. So suddenly the anime like switches perspective and fucking Trunks is waking up and he looks back and realizes that Gohan's gone, rushes off to the scene of the fight. It was an epic battle and he's looking down. It's raining. It's cloudy as shit. It's starting to fucking rain. He looks around and he sees Gohan's lifeless body just like laid out in the concrete, all beat the fuck up. And he just like slow walks over there, falls to his knees, and has one of the best like grief, cry, screams of anime history, in my fucking opinion. It's been AMV'd to all the shit from back in the day. Honestly, it deserves another AMV. If I'm honest, like, I think that shit could come back. It'd make a cool edit. All you motherfuckers that make anime edits, that's not me. You should do that, unless I do it first, and then in which case, don't do that, because I did it first. Or do it, and then, you know, we'll just have a series of it. I don't know. But that shit was, oh my god, it was just, I can't even find the words for how sad that shit was, but it ignited something in you just watching him go through this. And all of the emotions that Gohan was trying to draw out of him way at the beginning when he was training him, trying to get him to transform into a Super Saiyan, like all of that just right there, it all clicks and fucking Trunks transforms into a Super Saiyan for the first time right there. And that's pretty much like the ending of a history of Trunks. Like, you go from there and he time travels to the future and, you know, presents all shit like Dragon Ball Z typically goes, you know, the rest of the story. And that shit was incredible. I really fucking loved it. I didn't mean to give you guys an entire synopsis of the history of Trunks, or but here it is. There it is. I gave it to you. You got it now. I just couldn't do this whole list without actually putting him up there, because as I was thinking about grief and shit, that was one of those moments like, is that going to be me? Am I going to be in this motherfucking hospital room just on my knees screaming like a motherfucker? I don't know. It wasn't. I was very thankful that it wasn't. I didn't have to do that. But I don't know how I'm going to react if and when that does happen, because, you know, everybody does have to go. Not to get too morbid on y'all. Also, just as a side there, I do have to go ahead and say that another death in Dragon Ball Z that really got me was Goku's first death. Not everyone after that, because Dragon Ball Z robbed us of all consequences and issues after the Dragon Balls and situations like that. Because when Goku dies, like when he sacrifices himself way at the beginning and is like, yo, Piccolo, go ahead and just kill me and homie, like killing me and Raditz. And it was really sad. You watch Gohan like, oh god, daddy, what's going on? Like, daddy, like, it's really sad shit. And you have to feel that for all of like one episode. That's why I didn't actually put that on the list, because I was like, you can put Goku's first death up there because when you're little, it's like really sad. But literally like an episode or two later, it's just like, oh, he's coming back and there's a whole plan. Like the Saiyans are coming and he's got to get wished back. And then suddenly the Dragon Balls were, hey, man, start wishing people back to life, because that was not a thing in Dragon Ball. People were just trying to get power and shit. There wasn't a whole lot of Dragon Ball collecting, really. But enough about the Balls of Dragons, yo. Let's get to number four on the list. Now, number five. Number five on the list is Wolfwood from Trigun. I'm talking about the member of the Gung-Ho Guns Wolfwood, the man, the crossbearer himself. Trigun was one of my favorite animes. It was a mad classic. I think it was produced in the 80s and very popular in the 90s. But Wolfwood, his character death, it really threw me because it was kind of the catalyst for Trigun to start getting even sadder. Like, it was pretty sad, and then when he passes, suddenly characters like Millie, who were always a ray of sunshine for the anime and stuff, they start getting real sad and shit. If you guys don't remember Trigun, definitely give it a Google. But it was a classic, like, Western, like, apocalyptic feature Western anime about a man who had the highest bounty ever placed on anyone for wiping out a town and putting a hole in the moon, or putting like another large crater in the moon. It's a really awesome, I don't want to give any spoilers for that, because other than the fact that Wolfwood dies, but watching him in that chapel kind of leaned up against his cross, it struck a chord with me and stuck with me for the rest of the anime. That's my top five list. I had some honorable mentions there, like Maze Hughes from Full Metal Alchemist. His death was really bad. Like, watching his wife, well, excuse me, a doppelganger of his wife, like, shoot him was really off. Like, those things, these deaths here, they didn't necessarily, like, give me pause or make me really reflective. They were just really fucking sad. Like, Maze Hughes, Nina Tucker from fucking Full Metal Alchemist, but that's sad on everybody's level. I haven't met a person who finished fucking Full Metal Alchemist and didn't cringe at the words Nina Tucker or Nina Tucker plus dog. Like, it was just not, it was real sad. If you guys haven't checked that out, then I suggest giving yourself an opportunity to watch Full Metal Alchemist. This shit happens very quickly. The pacing of the show is like, hey guys, it is sad and it's going to continue to be sad, but every now and then, here's some uplifting portions, because you got to keep living through the sadness. And that's exactly what the hell I tried to do. I'm pretty much done with that list. I'm not going to give you guys any more lists, but let me know if you guys like that shit. If you guys like list content, I'll do that more often. That's not a problem in the fucking slightest to go through and pick out some of my favorite moments in anime history. But that's about where I'm at with the pod, guys. I don't have a whole lot extra to give you on account of everything that's been really going on here, but I wanted to, you know, sit down and at least give you guys a whole like pod. You know, I wanted to talk to you guys for sure. I love you all. I thank you so much for being here. We do have music because it's been such a family centric week and weekend here. I'm gonna play some of my brother's music. My boy Vanity, V-A-N-I-T-I. I think you've heard him on the pod before, but this time check him out again. You can catch him on Spotify, follow him on Instagram at VANE_ANTI. That's Vane_Auntie. Check him out here on the pod. I love you guys. This is a homage beat. Look, I can't sleep behind these EYEs. I see these dreams of eating everything I need to kill these fiends and flee this scene of repetition. My mind is missing while on the mission to get it lifted. I've been a writer since 95 and refuse to be denied. You want to ride out? Reservation for you to place these engines and scalping. that talk, King. Talk that talk, King. Yeah, that's my brother. Love him to death. We rode it out this motherfucking weekend, yo. That's my bro. Love him to motherfucking death. Love you guys again. This is the Well-Spoken Token. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm out.